Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Let's start the meeting. Otherwise, we'll not make it in time. Thank you very much for coming. We deal with the putting by initiation the update on the status of the merger of the three institutions. I think I'll just hand over to the minister.
Good morning, members. Mine is just to introduce the matter, and I'll leave the EM and the department and the minister, the skills and issues to deal with the details. In brief, the purpose, we refer the matter to the committee because in terms of regulations, that are the treasury regulations whom we have been interacting with, we must bring the matter to the committee for a view before we submit the matter to cabinet. That's the purpose of bringing the matter to the committee at this stage. Of course, later on, we'll be able to bring the necessary legislative reforms which the committee will have to deal with. The real challenge is that the East Skills Institute was launched in February last year. But then when we came in, we found that there was some difficulties in institutionalizing the new institution. The institution worked very hard to develop the business case because if you had established the public entity, you might have a business case which we submitted to the National Treasury and the Department of Public Service and Administration. Both departments have since commented on the and agreed on the formation of a new entity. Why are we forming this new entity? In terms of the MTV, which calls for the Information Society, we do need special mechanisms to build this information society. It won't happen on its own. It won't happen through the general education. We need special institutions to actually back the adoption of the e-skills and so that we can improve our utilization of the ICTs in society in general and in government in particular. The policy review which we presented a few weeks ago also supports that type of an approach. You remember that NEMISA was formed as a special institution to deal with a particular problem at that time, that as we were democratizing South Africa, there were very few black technicians in the broadcasting environment, or those who were able to enter into that industry. It was a special vehicle to actually deliver that we bring more people who come from disadvantaged communities in particular into the broadcast environment. We since then have to broaden this mandate, the discussion since 2012, that we need now to focus not just on specific broadcasting skills, which is just a component, but the whole e-skills, which is required in society. There's been the programs, which were conducted by the two or three entities which we are trying to combine into one now. But there's been some memorandum of understanding, and it doesn't work very well because there are a lot of delays in terms of transfer of funds, accountability of those funds, and so on. So we need to establish an entity which will try and teach these skills in our society. I hope the members have got the summary of the business case. Everyone says there is a business case, the entity can be established. And all what we are trying to get is your wise counseling at this stage, so that by the time we do take the entity to cabinet, we can say we have had initial consultation with parliament through the committee. when we take this matter to cabinet, we have to also attach the draft legislation. That's what the still is working on. We don't have a draft legislation, but I'm sure they'll be talking to what will be the principles which will drive that legislation in terms of formation of the entity. The issues to us are very important. There are a few matters which drag us very down as we have gone down successive points, even in the world ranking this year. It's the issue of access to ICTs, but it's also the utilization, which is very linked to the ICT skills. And all the countries which have improved is because people can utilize the ICTs, then that's why they have better adoption. It is that, in that background, that we are really here to take the comments from the Parliament so that we can advise us as we move forward. But we think the groundwork has been done. A lot of work was done, particularly in the last 2 years, 2014 and 2015, mainly last year, in developing this business case. And a lot of changes came from what was initially presented in 2012. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm not sure whether the Deputy Minister, because he's one who's working much closer with the Institute, wants to add anything. The other issue is that we do want accredited calls, and the Minister does offer accredited calls, and the Institute, which I'm not making with the Minister, is working through this collapse. I think the collapse was presented on stage to the committee. Our understanding, those are accredited course, so that people can get some certification for what they have learned. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think it's the background and the opening remarks as given by the Minister. They help us to get a context. I will join in later. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Over to the Chairperson.
Thank you. Morning, members, Minister, and DM. I think just to add a few words on some of the things that the Minister touched on. In terms of business case, the main reason why we came up with the business case was obviously because of the funding model that we needed to, or rather a sound funding. But also the fact that NEMISA is an SOC or a state-owned company, and we are integrating or transferring ESI, which is a branch of the department, into NEMISA. And the reasoning behind that was also just to maximize on the resources in terms of funding and in terms of the human resources between the two entities. Some of the reasons why the reasoning behind the business case is the fact that we realize that there's a lot of overlap in terms of and duplication in e-skill development within and between government departments, education, business, and civil society. And this is of great concern. And we have a lot of partnerships or stakeholder collaborations that we have with universities, where a lot of research was done with RESNES, which is a research unit within University of Waterloo. And one of the things that we came up with, or that was realized, that if we use universities and partner with universities, because they have the infrastructure, they have the research, they have the research capabilities, then we're able to partner with them in terms of accreditation of the courses. I think a lot of the other details will be detailed in the presentation that will be done by the CEO.
Thank you very much, Dr. Maluka. Dr. Mishisum.
Chair,
I'll ask the DG to also make on the profile, especially of the business player, and some introductions. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Good morning, good morning, Minister, Deputy Minister, and Chairperson of the MISA. Chairperson, if I can just be allowed to give a round of introduction in terms of the team, both from the Department and INESI. I'm Rose Fekes, DG, Department of Telecommunication Postal Services, CEO. Please do the introduction properly.
Thanks, DG. Ndiboniswa Chizumba, CEO, MISA.
Moera Markalata, CFO, NEMISA.
Peter Ramaswana, responsible for training, NEMISA.
Dharamo Legal Services, DTP.
Sisi Madlala, DTPS, SOC Oversight.
Dharamo Ubane, DTPS.
Nelson Pusehasa, responsible for capacity development in the Department of Telecommunications.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. If we can just take you through the presentation, it will be a joint presentation between myself and the CEO of PEMISA. Both the Minister and the Deputy Minister and also the Chairperson have spoken to slide number 2. Maybe in the interest of time, we'll skip slide number 2. Minister also spoke to the rationale why with regard to slide number 3. Why the entity that as a country, when you look at the World Economic Forum report, the Information Technology report, as a country, they either said we are performing well, but either said we want to intervene with that, we are not performing well. If you look at that diagram on the left, it's with regard to the individual usage of ICTs and also the usage by government. Now, the essence and the rationale with regard to the INESI Issues Institute is really to advance or massify the use of ICT both at the individual level and also at government level, but also not forgetting the business usage, even though we are performing fairly compared to the individual, we are performing better as a country. Now, really, this is the essence of the massifying of skills development through this institute. Moving on to slide number 4, is that when we started this process, you know, Honorable Chairperson, that's when we had the then DDG of Eastlands, Dr. Bessel, who was also seconded to NEMISA, and the team compromise of the department, Ministry, National Treasury, DPSA, and NEMISA in terms of working on the process, including the business case. So can I just, if you just take the meeting through the business case outline.
Thanks, DG. Chair, honorable members, Minister and Deputy Minister, the business outline, the business case is submitted. It emphasized the benchmarking research done by different institutions, the benchmark done by our partners, ResNet, which is a research network at the University of Walter Sisulu in the Eastern Cape, and other international institutions used by those researchers. The business case emphasized on the niche area. The business case emphasized that there is a niche of e-skilling our people around ICT usage. Now the question comes to this niche, is it new niche, is it an old niche, what is happening to the current institutions? The research is done by those researchers within the ResNet indicated that the e-skilling of our communities on the local base, on the ground, the current institutions that are there, for example, your universities, your FET colleges, are skilling people on the formal qualifications. So you need to meet the certain requirements, which is a certain grade on the grade 12.
for entrance, and there are different entrance requirements that are points in the point format. So this business case emphasized that the skills that are needed for our people in collaboration with all universities, all FET colleges or TVET if possible. The ordinary skills that says, can you use a computer? What are the dangers of using internet? That is illiteracy on the business case. What are the dangers of using social media? Can you use your smartphone? How far can you use your smartphones in sourcing services, either from government services, from business services? These days there's internet banking, sending money with M-Pesa and other activities. Those are the ordinary skills that are not there on the formal qualifications of universities and TVETs. When you go to e-entrepreneurship, we have a module designed, a certificate, short course designed by the University of Pretoria. And I'm also bringing the colleagues here in. It's a short course of e-entrepreneurship. It teaches the SMEs on what are the advantages of internet, on applying for funds, on selling your products. These days, you do your bids, or you're doing shoes at home, or you're selling vegetables, you can just design a blog, you can register on a Facebook and sell those products. But these are the skills that are not there in our community. They don't know our people already that they have free skill opportunities, free platforms to do their businesses. Then when you talk of e-commerce and e-business, we have a certificate course also designed by the University of Pretoria. These modules that I'm talking about are online with the University of Pretoria. They just completed them this year in April. So we're busy in the process of putting them on the new institute's website so that everyone can source them, can have access to them. Now, the interesting thing on the business plan also as part of the new program is the application design. These days, you are talking about designing apps. Apps are an icon that you find on your smartphone where you click, for example, M-Pesa. You click, you send money to Limpopo from here, to KZN or from wherever you are. There are apps also that are educational. There are apps that are for business-wise. So this module teaches these ordinary people, including youth from high schools, including youth who are not employed, who are not working. They teaches them the platforms that they can use through e-skills, through ICT activities, to advance themselves. Now another question might come to say, these short courses that you design with universities, what are they going to do with them after receiving a certificate? What do I do after that? We said to these colleagues, why are we designing these short courses with the university? So that at least this certificate can give this young one or this elder person or this adult an entrance to a certain diploma, or if it happens through those stages, to start a degree level. But the emphasis is on introducing our people to the university environment on the college side. The accreditations, the accreditors, some colleges are still designing, the Western Cape University, they are designing the e-leader module. E-leaders module are these community leaders, either it's NGOs, it's social workers, SMEs, on how to use the ICTs on advancing their activities. So the University of Western Cape is designing that module for us. Because if we centralize them and design them from the NEMISA side, we'll have to look for one accreditation structure on the structures of accreditations from SAQA, NQF, and the Department of Higher Education. So it's easier with universities because they've got different bureaucracies, some are faster, some are quicker. And the privilege, the prestige image of using a university. NEMISA's modules are accredited with MIT CETA, all of them. The accreditation started from 2011 to 2016. 2 weeks back, last month, MICT CETA gave us extension because of the changes on the QTCO to 2017. They are revising all frameworks. So NEMISA's courses are all accredited with MICT CETA. We also have the broadcast engineering course, which is designed by MICT CETA, which we offer in NEMISA's site. The colleagues have, on the business case, activities that give extension of a university to the communities. So there are some activities that are needs from a community. We give them access to the collab. They go to the collab and ask, can we get this kind of assistance, a skill? For example, we have got at the East London, in collaboration with the ECDC, Eastern Cape Development Corporation there. Through their local content hub, we are training about 250 youth on e-literacy. That's the computer basics. So these are youth that have been identified by ECDC in the Eastern Cape, that they are interested on studying or engaging themselves on the ICT environment. So these are the partnerships that college does with communities. Others are research, of course. A colleague will be asked by an NGO or a community to conduct a research on their behalf. They call us and said, there's a community that wants us to do a research, for example, the EHER in Limpopo. They are busy with community clinics, health clinics. They are doing a research on what kind of a software they can design to integrate the local clinics, so that they've got a database, medication, and all of that. So the business case emphasized those areas. Of course, the question will come to the funding part of the business case to say, this money that you have stated as your wish, as the business case is a wish, we envisage collaborations with so many partners, business partners, government partnerships, our own SOE entities. We're talking to SABC, we're already training broadcast engineering for them. They fund the training. So that's another source of funding. MICT CETA is giving us the end user learnership, they fund. We're currently doing the radio learnership with MICT CETA. They fund for that. Now, we're talking with our own sister SOEs, like CETA, on the e-literacy, e-entrepreneurship, and e-business and commerce, so that they can fund those modules to go to the communities. So we're looking at the partnership, which is a basket of them. The telecoms industries, they are so interested on the creative industry, which is part of the business case on the collapse. The creative industries on designing content for your mobile phones, telecom, MTN, Vodacom, and them. So the business is, we support it and we're on top of it. We've already implemented some of them, and then the activities around them, Fiji. So, Chairperson, if you look at my, I've touched in all of those activities as part of the business case. The e-astuteness, we're talking of teaching and learning there, is a term that's emphasized on the ICT environment, the taking of leadership from the environment of teaching and learning. That is our teaching and learning process growing people to become leaders tomorrow. That's e-astuteness. So this is the teaching and learning unit where we have contact learning like your e-literacy. We'll have to sit down with these young ones or adults to show them how computer works,
and others. The multi-stakeholder collaboration is the one that is the partnership that I've emphasized that we've already started doing that. Knowledge for innovation, this is the research component, which we work very closely with Niraka Institute from DSC. They have a lot of research that we benchmark ourselves with. We ask them, we go around with them where there's a need, because we see ourselves as the business case, as the foot soldiers of implementing some of the recommendations done from researches already before by Miraga and the current ones that are coming. This is the structure of the collapse. We left with three provinces in Mpumalanga, Free State and Northwest. We did last year with the partnership of IBM, DOT, and they did a scan, environmental scan on the Northwest. They have identified that it would be nice to establish a collab at the Northwest University that talks about ICT and agriculture. They have motivated a lot of them. Now, these collabs have different thematic areas. Hence, they do share. If a course, for example, that is designed with the University of Pretoria, e-entrepreneurship, we closed it down, we share it with all other collabs to say, all collabs, the course is done already, the curriculum and design is online, now you no longer design the entrepreneurship, we're using this one from University of Pretoria. E-leaders, they all collabs know that we use a course, a short course from the University of Western Cape. So they do share information.
Thank you very much, CEO. With regard to the process of advancing the ESC into a legal public entity, Honorable Chairperson, the Minister spoke to the fact that we are now busy with step number 3. Perhaps the submission of the business case to the Cabinet would also be the inclusion of the draft legislation, and then once we finalize once we finalize it at the level of the executive, it would then be tabled to Parliament. Step 3 would then lead us into step number 4, but for us to be able to go into step number 4, these are the following critical steps that we also need to follow, which is amendment of the interest establishment document in terms of the Company Act, that is the existing memorandum of incorporation of NEMISA into a new MO for the ENESI, and then requesting the Minister of Finance to amend the NEMISA to the ENESI and list it in terms of the tyranny, and then request the Minister of DPSC to make a determination in terms of the Public Service Act to transfer functions and staff from the DPS into ENESI. Then from then we'll then move on to step number 4, which is the approval of the initial organizational and post appointment of the members, and then effect the transfer. With regard to the bill, the following are the key principles of the bill, which is the essence of the establishment to provide its legal status and allocating it in terms of as a public entity within the appropriate level of government, and then the objectives of the entity, which would be expressed from the business case, the application of the Companies Act and other legislations, and then the functions of the accounting authority, that is the board, and its appointment process, the general management, which is the composition controlling bodies allocate powers and functions to that board, including the charge and conditions of office, financial matters, and then lastly, the general matters such as the legal rights, regulations, the executive authority to make the necessary regulation and necessary interim arrangement. We have established a joint task team between us, the NEMISA, GTSA, and National Treasury. We are also working with the Department of Higher Education and also the Department of Communications, and I think I mentioned GTSA. Moving on to slide number 11. In the financial year, we are planning to finalize the bill with the support of yourself and Honorable Chairperson and the members. And then we will then operationalize in the 2016-2017 financial year. Now, with regard to the proposed action, moving on to slide number itself is the effort is to position its youth as the grand challenge and also ensure that we get the approval for the business case and also the development of the enabling legislation. And what we also need from the CEO, and then I'm happy that the CEO, since he's been on board, he's taken ownership of this entity and assisting us moving forward, is to promote the model and the work of the institute, and also the participation in the finalization of the aggregate framework for the national impact against the outcome 5 of the medium-term strategic framework in supporting South Africa Connect and the National Development Plan. With regard to slide number 12, CEO, if you could just take over from slide number 12.
This slide talks about the impact. Now, the business case emphasizes the impact that we envisage in 5 years emanating from the beginning of the establishment of INESI. We have 10 million South Africans impacted. The impact comes from various ways. This is the impact from research done within these 5 years, the impact from the contact and learnings done within these 5 years. Let me give you an example. In last month when we sit with the University of Pretoria's Enterprise, on the e-entrepreneur module alone, last year they were given a project to train by the Tshwane Municipal Metropolitan City to train 10,000 youth around Tshwane, Pretoria, Mamelodi, Rankuwa, and all of those. They finished this year in February. So one collab, if you can train 10,000 youth on one online module, so you can see the impact. If we have 9 collabs, how much it can cost. So this is the impact of that research, the trainings, the awareness and the campaign. Because as part of that business plan, you'll see on the awareness and the campaigns, it talks about extending, letting South Africans know about the advantages and disadvantages of ICT's usage. So this is the impact. If we go on awareness, posters, radios, all platforms that we use to teach and to let South Africa aware of the ICT's activity. So we envisage that we can reach that target within that 5 years of impact. These are the current numbers that we used from our current entities that happens on the impact from the collapse. They vary the numbers. Then we put the slide that emphasized the niche area there. Here I wanted to emphasize, members and chair, the innovation part of it, that each and every innovation that happens around within the ICT environment in South Africa are happening prior to the knowledge or the skills given to our communities. It would be nice through the researches indicated from Miracles Institute and other universities, RISNES, that when we benchmark the ICT activities or growth of the country, if we have identified that, for example, we want to innovate broadband cables, fiber cables, but now, are we going to get people from outside the country to come bring fiber cables installed and left? One day we envisage that our own youth, training them from the ground, the ICT activities and giving this, encouraging them on ICT activities, one day we'll be manufacturing our own fiber cables. We'll be having our own technicians of fiber cables. Therefore the process of broadband connectivity will be faster. This is the envisage of the business case. And it shows you the stages of, the business case here is not thinking of the executive qualifications, because already universities have those qualifications. We're thinking of people at primary school levels, high school levels, and those who didn't make it to high school levels, and those who did this gap between high school level and the universities TVET. At the meeting with the higher education meeting with the DG, the higher education is also establishing community colleges. We see ourselves playing a bigger role, on at least starting from that level, to have our own ICT community colleges that specialize with ICT's activities, ICT's curriculums. That's where we see ourselves. So the higher education team was very interested to say they will assist us in that. And we're hoping that people, institutions like MICT CETA and other CETAs will be interested on helping us or assisting us on launching ourselves on the community colleges. The model is the same as the colleges. These community colleges are going to be hosted by universities. We have already started that. We're hosting our colleagues with the universities. So this is the experience that we can share, that we shared on the meeting last week with the higher education. They were so interested in that experience because they haven't started the community college. So they see themselves as learning from us on if you want to host as an institute within the university, how do you do it, what processes. So we'll be working with them on that. This is the partnership that I've indicated from the beginning. Our business case emphasized those groupings. Then we just indicated on the current ones that we have and that we're working with as NEMISA. All those on your right-hand side, we're working with them. And some are bringing funding to the modules or the trainings that they're giving us. So in this case that if we grow on the partnerships, and if we have the support and the blessings of this house and the department and other departments, because ICTs are cutting across, we won't have a problem of funding. We can use that, those partnerships. Those are the current numbers that appears on our 2015, that we have obtained through the collapse and the learnerships that we did.
So you changed that to 2014-15, so the headline on the previous slide is correct. Let me just check that. It says here 2013-14, and you said 2014-15.
Yeah, no, it's correct. Sorry, it was me. Yeah, it's 2013-14, yes. These are the numbers of 2013-14. Thanks, Nungu. Honorable Member Shin, thanks. This is the budget, projected budget on the business case that I talked about. But from this wish list, we're also working hard to have partners. The aim is to have the funded modules by partners. That's what we're preaching when we go around doing on our stakeholder engagements. DG? Yeah, this is the structures it appears on the business case. For the new institute, it gives more empowerment on the delivery role, as you see, so that we extend or strengthen the delivery roles of the colleagues and the other partners that we have, that we'll be using. The board structure, which is governance structure, will be in that format. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Nana, comments, questions? Honorable Suwela, Honorable McKenzie, Honorable Shea, Honorable Podleti, Honorable Sako.
Thank you, Chairperson. My comment will be based on slide number 15 and also 7. On slide number 7, it is indicated that 3 provinces out of 6, the colleges are yet to be established. And if you check on slide number 15, it appears that those provisions where there are no collabs, they are not benefiting from their programs. How soon are we likely to see those profits benefiting, or how soon are we likely to see them getting on board or the collabs established so that they also benefit from the programs? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just in terms of e-literacy in general, the best place to start any kind of e-literacy program is in a school, and the earlier the better, because you find that certainly, and I've seen it with my own children, the uptake for electronic devices and the uptake in an e-environment amongst young people, their ability to learn and grasp the concept and get to grips with it literally is much, much greater than when you're older. So clearly that would be the place to start. And I don't see a lot, and please point me in the right direction, that perhaps it would be better to set up some sort of collab or e-literacy program in all our schools. And I know that is happening, but surely that's where the emphasis should be on that school. Then I'm glad to see more cooperation with tertiary institutions. You mentioned the University of Pretoria a lot. You've mentioned UNISA once. What about other universities? I have a particular affinity for the University of the Fort Hare and the young people of that institution who are clearly progressive. Are there any activities with other institutions, and can you spread it much, much wider with the budget that you have? In terms of e-literacy for adults, I'm acutely aware of the advantage of white privilege during the apartheid era, where a man my age, even from a poor working class background, was able to access a good education and health care that enabled me to progress in life. Somebody my age in a similar situation from a black or marginalized community, for example, who now finds themselves stuck at a level which is difficult to progress, both in terms of education, access to education, and access to e-literacy. How do we address those people to ensure that they're not marginalized? I would imagine that would be a primary focus of your institution, and I'd be very keen to see much more activity taking place there. Then you mentioned you were putting modules and certificates up on your website. Again, specifically for those people who are not illiterate, how then do they access that information on your website? Do you see the irony in that? And just a last comment on your projected budget. I always get very alarmed when I see an operating budget of 72 million and a key human capacity development program of 140 million, where your operating budget is, compared to the capacity development programs, is 50% of the amount that you're allocating for what should be the primary purpose of your institution. So perhaps you could look at trimming that operating budget and spending more money on development. Just a comment. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Council. Honourable Chin.
Thank you, Chairperson. This establishment of this institution scares me, because we should be cutting the public service, not growing it. And I'm wondering, to me this looks like, NAMISA and its predecessors have been around since the good old days of apartheid, and when government money was used to finance propaganda projects for the National Party government, and it has evolved from that. We're looking for a reason why this thing should continue to exist. And I'm not convinced that establishing something as onerous as this is the right way to go. No one doubts the need for having people become computer literate. It's essential. But there are two reasons why the majority of South Africans are not illiterate. One is the shocking state of the basic education system, which turned out barely literate young adults at the rate of hundreds of thousands. And the other is the lack of infrastructure, e-infrastructure in the country. Now, you know, to me, we're actually putting the cart before the horse here, is that we should be actually plumbing in this kind of education to schools, training the teachers for starters. I don't see the teachers here as your main target for education. That and making sure that the infrastructure is up and running. Without those two basics, you know, this isn't going to fly. I wonder if it isn't better, instead of actually spending a lot of money consolidating these, getting the taxpayers funded, if it wouldn't be better to actually have a model where you have a working council of industry sector people, the government, education, business, all those good things, so they can shape the kind of skills training that is out there, acting as a coordinating function, and then incentivizing NGOs, people who are actually specialists in education, to actually roll out the training all around the place. You know, I don't believe that we need to establish something that has a full-time board. I mean, the organogram is quite onerous. You know, it's a huge, another government bureaucracy. Actually, what we need is nimble footedness, if you like, in actually bringing people on board. Because as soon as you put an instrument in the hands of youngsters, they know how to use it better than you and I do, within a matter of minutes. And so what they need is the tools and the infrastructure to make it work. We don't need another bureaucracy that is going to be just basically an employment engine for the public service. I also want to know on the finance model, I mean, who are you hoping to fund it apart from government? You have some partners here, but they don't seem to be particularly lucrative. Are you hoping that the private sector is going to come up and foot the bill? Are the students going to pay for their own courses? Or are these courses going to be free, as they were under the original model? I mean, I think we must have paid some of the most expensive, to educate in house, most of the most expensive, I call them media technicians in the land. They're not having to pay back yet. Are we going to universities? What is the model here? The number of program trainees you have during the 2013-14 year, close to 6,000. Do you know if any of those are actually going to be employed? Are they all POPs, or are those just people who enrolled for the course? So I'm wanting to look at who else is going to be contributing financially to this. Because I'm afraid this is just going to be another black hole to which taxpayers pour their money. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I think Honourable Sheen is taking all the questions, the concerns raised, especially the Department of Education, both basic and higher education, being one of the stakeholders. On text 8 about the process to advance in its into a legal public entity, steps 1 to 4, what is the time frame between one step to the other until the completion of all the steps? And on the 10 million that you expect to train, what role will you play in placement? You train them and what happens after training? And on the structure, you know, the organogram here doesn't give one sense of transformation, the progress that we've made in terms of the transformation. We only see, you know, the positions that are, I think, that are individual here, but you can see the gender balance as to who holds which office.
You also spoke. Thank you, Chaperan. Her question. I'm interested to know as to who absorbs these trainings that you have. Do you have a relationship or a memorandum, maybe of understanding or so, with some of the private sector that can absorb. And I think the issue of the business case, looking forward to having our own those that grow on the areas around optic fiber. I think it's good. I was also on slide 7 on the Mpumalanga Free State and Northwest, or especially Mpumalanga and Free State. By when do you think that these collabs will be established and the optimal utilization of the Northwest one, because an MOU has been signed? Also, what methods then will be used also to activate and create awareness at the entities, especially in rural areas? And lastly, how does an entity that receives an allocation of about 40.6 million move to about 386 million within a period of less than a year? Chairperson, I'll end there. Others have been covered by colleagues. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Daniel.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to know, unless the department presented 2014-2015 and 2015-2016 strategic plans and APP of INES. It was launched in 2014. Today, you're presenting an INES that will open in 2016 and 2017. Can you please be honest here? Explain who has been approved by Parliament and what is this new thinking? Secondly, what is your proposed intake people in each financial year, given that you intend to impact 10 million? The third one, colleges often outside of the communities that INES wishes to educate. Does this have been thought to use to some service centers which are or community hall which are based in communities?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much. I think colleagues, part of the responsibility from our side is to reflect whether we think this process and this establishment of the entity is correct. And I think the sentiment echoed here is that there is a need of e-skilling in the country. And maybe one of the issues that we've got to look at, colleagues, is the type of the target market that is being looked at. Because you've got to understand and noting, not responding to what colleagues are saying, because this one in the presentation that is different. We've got to have an opinion in Parliament, and therefore, it needs been from where we are sitting to be able to reflect properly and engage properly. Now, if we are to look at the category, stats, SA releases stats and shows us you have majority of young people who have left school already. This is a category of people who are outside school now, who are sitting unskilled. What are the interventions that government can be able to make to be able to respond to some of these challenges? Because if we are to sit with majority of young people unskilled, unemployable, unemployed, it's a ticking time bomb for the country. So for me, that's where I start in looking at this responsibility that this institution would have to have. Now, when we talk about what we normally raise as transformational issues, now come to that issue. Will this institution assist us to deal with transformational issues within the sector? We ensure that the previously dominated industry where you do not find the majority of the young people that want to find as future as a journalist or media consultant, would you hire them? Are you able to produce such? Are you able to give beyond just? I think the institute is not really looking at just giving computer literacy. And those of us, maybe I'm speaking like this because we went to an oversight to see the institute in Devon, and we interacted with the team, the professor there,
who gave us a sense of what they do and what they are hoping to. And for me, that was an eye-opener at the time we did that visit. And maybe our report was more summary to those who were not there, who couldn't really first and experience what was happening. And I linked that experience. I went to Russia in 2010, where you find, again, linking to what Honorable Mackenzie and Honorable Wishin is saying, you find young kids from high school, from primary, even adults, the developing of technical colleges. Because in South Africa, we need to move. This thing of learning IAE or OOM, that doesn't equip me to go to do anything. That doesn't assist. Because if I finish high school and my parents can't afford to take me anywhere, what is it that I can do? And these are the things that we have a responsibility to start thinking about the future. Yes, we have learned quite a lot in terms of it, but you can't continue as a country where you fight children coming out of a system, but it's thousands of them that each year are coming out of the system, are not employable, are not anything. How do we respond to that? Now, I'm making these comments, colleagues, while I come to my questions. Where I am sitting, that there is a need for this to be established. But then we'll go to the nitty-gritty of how it needs to be dealt with. Because I think there are two levels of it. Our issue in terms of support for its existence and what type of animal we want to see in its existence. And previously when it was that these institutions are coming in into board, are we seeing the measure being able to respond to the challenges that we have as a society? And equally so with the colleagues that are raising, Minister, I feel maybe we might do the structure issue, but I think it's a bit premature to have the structure, maybe based on your regulation you are requested. Because you've got to be able to go into detail, this is what we are developing. And then once you do that, then in detail, then start saying, okay, how do we respond to it? Equally with the same issue of the budget. I take the budget and the structure as a wish list from one city. And then once we do the legislation and the nitty-gritty, then we come into these issues in detail. To say, this is this wish list firstly, responding to the mandate that we want to see. Then respond to that. Because I understand the process would be that, Minister, you take it to cabinet, and then it will come back again to us in the form of now a legislation, and then we go into detail. Because once you do that, then we are able to say, now, based on this legislation, how we can cost what we are going to. And equally, I think, in the true sense of it, we shouldn't go for a bloated structure while we have a wish list. I think we should still follow what Treasury has said. With minimum, let's do more. So, let's find a structure that is enough for us to operate, but it shouldn't be too much, but it doesn't justify bloatedness, because if the trainings are going to be offered into it. And then I think another issue is relation to the training. And I'm comforted because initially it was sort of an experience if the trainings are not accredited and all those things. So that has clarified, I'm happy with it. Again, the issue of the costs. I think we'll have to come back to them. Your budget, as you are looking at it, I think I'll reserve that for now and take it as a wish list. But once we come to the secret of the establishment, then we can go into details and say, this is what we want to achieve, this is what we need. But I think for me, that's where I'm sitting in terms of the need for this. But again, Minister, for me, it goes to say, because when you respond to this, it's important to reflect whether is there another institution that exists, that does what you want to do. Somebody might argue, we've got CSIR that currently does the research and all those things for this. How do we relate to that? Are we going to duplicate that part? Or it's so you've got to be very clear in how you deal with those issues for us. And then the other challenge that we have, I know Minister Mseka is trying to deal with the issue of languages. It's
something that is ongoing in this country. Now, if you are to target now the illiterate part of our population, the language becomes an issue. How we translate, transfer the skill. Let's not go to the root of ACT. We've learned some weaknesses. You know, when ACT was starting us in the higher education committee as well, I interacted with it. There were weaknesses that you still find the same things that happened in high school in grade 10. You still get a child being exposed to the same thing. More theory than practical. A parent would have said that my child is weak when it comes to theory, and therefore I'd rather have my child go to an FET to get technical skills. So I think, how do we incorporate those lessons learned from almost, because I see this as a college, more or less. How do we take those lessons learned to be able to build onto this and to not make the same mistakes? Obviously, 21 years, a lot of has been happening around the skills structure. Therefore, we should be able to build out of those and develop a model that is working. So that's the assurance, I think, from us as a community that we would need as we go forward. The issues of duplication, issues of land, so that you don't need to ask, you're still going to learn, whereas those lessons are existing across the country. Oram Ekansi, you want to say something?
Thank you, Chair. Just two fingers on the whole issue of CSR and innovation. No, not many people realize that South Africans were pioneers in the field of x-rays. We invented a CAT scan. We invented radar. We did the first heart transplant. We invented the transactions, the secure transaction method for credit card transactions online. Siyabulela Tosa invented the rocket fuel for NASA. We have so many innovators and young people who are bright and talented and have so much potential that we need to identify, nurture, and create in this country. I know the chicken industry very well, the poultry industry very, very well. And what the poultry industry do is they spend a couple of million for a 5-year term and sponsor a chair in poultry science at the University of Pretoria on this course. And they've done some incredible work in inventing vaccinations for infectious bursal disease, which is a chicken disease. But really pioneering work, when it world-leading stuff when it comes to this. And perhaps when you look at the budget of this kind of department, you say, can we not then sponsor a chair in ICT at the University of Pretoria, for example? That would, you know, encourage students to develop programs that would encourage innovation and creativity in these areas. Just a suggestion. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Singh, still have something?
Thank you, Chair. Just perhaps expanding a bit on what you just said. The need is, as you say, on justice, civic school and unemployable, but also some elder people as well. There are post-independence, our democracy, there was a real understanding amongst educationists and scientists, and I know quotes from CSR and all that, about the critical state of education and how we needed to leapfrog the folks who had been disadvantaged by the past. So there are many, many, many innovative education projects out there, schooling projects, computer-based skilling projects that are out there, being developed by NGOs and small businesses that are dying on the vine because of a lack of funding and a lack of support from government. Now, instead of actually establishing a bureaucracy, why don't, we've gone here, to all the universities and the technicons and all that sort of stuff. That's fine. To me, that's too far away, too high up and too far away from where the need is. That we actually need to get to people at grassroots, people out in the communities, out in the rural areas, to actually find the NGOs and the educational institutions that are out there, and actually establish this coordinating council that actually funds and incentivizes those people to take those courses on a level. I can understand that the co-labs are perhaps part of that, or could be the home base, perhaps. But, I'm afraid that we're going to be establishing a bureaucracy that's going to be too far up and too high from, away from. We actually need to embrace the people that have already done the work rather than reinventing it all again.
I'm going to allow, you can notice that it's a conversation with us, amongst us, as members with you, obviously, to hear the views, because it's a different type of a meeting today, where we've got to reflect on what is before us and our opinions, and more a discussion. I see Honourable Killian. Okay, I'm going to allow you and then allow them to come into the discussion, and then come back. I think we still have some time, and then come back to the discussion.
Chairperson, no, actually I was deliberately not participating earlier because both Honourable Suwela and myself serve on higher education. And what we have found is that some colleges are established and operate under a dedicated department, and then after some time it is felt that a college should move to higher education or post-school education because it's part of the broader NQA framework, etc. Now here we have a dedicated role, clearly. I just feel, and that's why I wanted to hear what the other members were saying, is there no country that we can take lessons from that started, you know, we're talking of the Asian tigers, we're talking of some countries in the sort of similar positions that we find ourselves, where we have, where they also had large rural populations, where there was also an over-concentration of communication networks and access to opportunities in urban cities with less in remote areas. So is there really no other country that we can benchmark ourselves on? You know, Chairperson, what I'm saying is the nature of the animal. A government is usually naturally expanding and building more structures, employing more people, and then the silo effect kicks in, and people operate in silos. And that is what we should try to avoid. So in this process, we should really be as innovative. What I see of today is an in-principle discussion that we need to have a lead department that should drive e-skilling the nation. That is what I see. But the structure and the budget and all of that, I'm a little hesitant that we're again going to reinvent a wheel, which is maybe what we could tap on other institutions and find a more affordable opportunity for us to achieve what this is intended to achieve. Thank you, Chairperson.
I'm not sure, Minister Ndim, I'm not sure, is Ndim first? Okay, Ndim?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for allowing us to be members of Parliament as well to enter the debate. Thank you very much. You know, I just want to say something in a form of a context. I think I pick up from what the chair was saying, and it's Honourable Mackenzie who seemed to be not sure whether we need to go this route and make reference to the chairs within universities. But I really think we should understand the context. You know, the Minister of Higher Education presented a policy, post-school education in South Africa, and spoke about the need group, neither in employment nor in education. I think that's the context that the Jefferson tried to flag. So if we start from that, we realize that and also looking at the percentages of unemployment, youth unemployment in this country, around 45, depending on who is your source. So obviously you see in the ladder, the position of a chair in an academic situation is high up. The majority of the target people who are concerned about, who are neither in education or in training or in employment, and we move from a position that ICTs as a sector can make a huge contribution. The World Bank studies have shown that we are a multi-billion industry, and if we play our part intervening with the youth in ICTs, it could be a revolutionary and a game changer. So I'm saying this, Chairperson, really to say we definitely need this kind of intervention. I fully agree that as to what kind of an animal it is, the details could be worked out. But which is between the institutions of higher learning and the workplace. Because if we don't do that, it means we are likely to have too many people not being illiterate, nor participating in this in the ICT as a such. The reason why I'm saying that is because we all know the numbers of people who are entering computer science and engineering. They won't even get there to win those academic tests. In terms of our criteria, they won't qualify. So the question is then, what do we do? And I think in most countries, people do, I mean, even countries like Germany, do create opportunities for government, private sector, and institutions of education to skill young people. It's a form of education, but it's a preparation for workplace or for further education and training. So I thought it's important to say that, because in these, obviously the career profiles and paths will come from the private sector. It's not training for its own sake. It's for the workplace. So there is a close link between all these pairs. Also the curriculum within this, we envisage a situation where they will be approved by specific institutions so that people are able to migrate, those who want to go beyond employment, to this institution. So I thought it's important for all of us to really see the need as envisaged by the presenters. Also related, I want to, in a way, agree when Honorable Shi says we have to look seriously at issues of infrastructure. And I think also then, while agreeing, I'm saying we should see this initiative as a support of where we're going in terms of broadband rollout. The priority districts as given really are meant to target exactly the niche group, those who are neither at school, and the questions were, how will they know? And obviously, as we don't see a fragmented approach to broadband rollout. We see it closely linked to packages at a community level of what it comes with, because broadband rollout, it comes exactly with uptake and intake and e-government. So I just thought I should broadly say, you know, I think. Thank you.
Thank you, Shepherdson. Let me thank the members for valuable inputs. I think they do help us, and we really appreciate the effort to get the report so that we don't distort your valuable input as we go to cabinet. But I think generally there is a general consensus that we do need for the institution, although there may be some reservation from us. And I think the issues which have been raised by members, especially on the nitty-gritty, is that they have to follow. It is true, Shepherdson, but when we present something to government, we must give some initial thinking. So although I fully agree with you, if you look at, for instance, on the finances, quite clearly this program will need a lot of funding, and we have to find other innovative funding models to increase from the current funding. The current funding is at about 15 years. And the impact is good, but it's not scale. I think what the key here, we're trying to create scale in production, because if you look at the NDP is saying you must produce this society with wide skills of knowledge on utilization of ICT at scale. And it puts that responsibility on government. It says government. So the government, in terms of NTP, must lead. But let's also not underplay, the private sector is doing a lot of training. The NGO, to a limited extent, not at a massive scale. So we recognize those. But when you interact with all these entities, recently we had a national ICT forum, where all these entities will say, it is government, we must take the lead. So the issue of government taking the leadership, it comes from even those sectors, or not members. That they recognize they play their roles, but it is primarily the responsibility of government. Yes, the education system is critical that we must change. But to deal with this threat of digital divide, because of its impact, it is critical that we take extra measures on top of what our basic education is trying to do, our higher education is trying to do, of course, in collaboration with all these key stakeholders. So we do need the extra measures to take, otherwise we'll face a huge digital divide. And that digital divide will affect those who are already marginalized, as honorable members have been saying. Let's have a specific focus on the unskilled who have left schools, and the adults who don't have the skills. We take those quite seriously. I'm sure the officials have been taking copious notes on it. The issue of language, Jefferson, I fully agree with the members, for you, that it should have of essence. I think as a nation we have not really dealt with this. The institutions like UNESCO and Natal, I think they are trying on their own to improve. I think we just congratulate the universities are really taking this thing of language very seriously. And I think the case study of the University of KwaZulu-Natal is what other universities and other intellectuals are utilizing. Not only in South Africa, but in the whole African continent, because while we are unique, what is unique about South Africa? Can we learn from other countries? Yes, we are unique. There was no other country where the system of discrimination, particularly in terms of knowledge acquisition, was so institutionalized. Yes, other developing countries were facing similar challenges, but not to the scale South Africa is facing. Unfortunately, it is not us. It is what we inherited from our past. And we have to find ways of correcting that. So our aim, I think the department, we as a department, as government, would really have a look, because the bulk of the people who are supposed to be beneficiary of this, they are not having any high skills in grasping the foreign language, official language like English. Official language. It is an official language, sorry about that. But to them, it still remains a foreign. Let me just put it in context. It is an official language, but they can't express it. And if it is going to be the only language of access to this information, it creates a barrier. Like the members were saying, if the access is going to be internet, it creates a barrier to those who don't have it. But I think the walking around in the provinces and working with the people on the ground, they assist in publishing the information on how to access this. In short, Jefferson, we have to look at the impact. What impact do we need? And I think we remain guided by the National Development Plan on what we need to create. But the agency is that the targets have to be realized in a short space of time. If we have got 14,000 families, if at least each family can help people with the basic ICT skills, it'll go a long way. But if we check the level of unemployment, particularly among our young people, who are not outside the school system, it's very high. If if it is correct that the size of 20% or above in certain areas, we have to do something. This is an opportunity to bring them back to be part of the society we are trying to build. I thought that we just give those citizens and say we're noted what the members are saying. I think it was helpful to us because we get another angle. And we have noted about the structures. Yes, of course, we have to be very prudent about resources. We can't just create bureaucratic structures, but what we take from members, we must create the structures which are not so thin or lean that they can't do anything. But they must not be fair either. But we must create appropriate structure which enable us to do the task at hand. And I'm sure the officials, in terms of the structure and the transformation, I'm sure the department and the institution may come on that, because this is not the aim. If we've had, we'll still have to fill those structures. This is just a proposed structure of a new entity which is supposed to be formed. But I think the question I think from the member was saying, as you fill those posts, once it's approved, it must take into account the issues of transformation, which we need, including that one of gender. I think those things should be noted. In those chapters, and I think we have noted the concerns, because that was the purpose, to get the inputs from the committee, to get the inputs from Parliament, so that we take them into consideration as we move forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Who's coming? There's still some issues.
Thanks, Chair. First question, the illiteracy, on the comment of illiteracy program, the computer skills. The aim here, of course, is to start there at the primary school level. We did studies of the private industry, some who started like ICDM. We talked with them, Kagiso Active. We talked with them. Kagiso Active want for their program of issues 40 million rands for it to be deployed. Now, what you said, because we want a free platform where these young ones can even train while they are at home, those with an opportunity of having laptops or computers, to be deployed at all community centers as the first content that should be deployed at these smart centers. In here, the Western Cape, we are studying the ICANN model. They want to deploy ICANN as part of the smart centers. So we're sitting with our team from here, Western Cape, I think Sarin is here, of software engineers, to design a framework that will be us, belonging to us. Content is there of computer literacy that we can deploy on the website, and then it's available all the country, all over the country for free. But our target, of course, includes the primary school, so that when ministers or government officials go to these schools and offer a computer lab, there is a content already. They go to our website and they will find this platform of a computer literacy. That's how we want it to deploy it, so that it's all over. Then it can be used by schools. That is why on a meeting with higher education, they were so interested on that kind of model to deploy these programs. Therefore, all the programs, short certificates that will be designed from colleges, we want them to be online also, available on the website. So that everywhere in a community center, smart center, or library, or church, if there's a computer, one can go to the website of NAC and get these products, all these programs as online. So we started using this one. The Kagiso Active one is also on isiZulu and Sesotho, I think. So it talks to you. It's interactive design, kind of. When you're clicking on a computer, it tells you on isiZulu and not. So we send to ourselves two engineers to design our own framework. But when you go to the source code, you can translate to languages. then it will change to languages. The issue of a chair, establishing a chair, is a crucial one also. We in discussion with the Swan University of Technology, they are in almost four provinces. They have 10 campuses in Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Gauteng. To establish a chair that teaches teachers, because they've got the bulk of their teachers training college and faculty, is big enough, and it goes to these various provinces. To use the computer literacy, to use ICTs on influencing kids in class. But the focus here, the beginning focus is on using ICTs on teaching math and science. Once you get that framework, you can do it to other subjects. So we're exploring that with the Swan University of Technology to do that. The other provinces that are in green there, there are some work that we're doing already, but not in the form of a college. For example, in Mpumalanga, in any time from now, we're offered the learnership for radio from MICT CETA for 30 youth. 2 weeks back, we were there with the minister, and the premier's office is handling it from that office. The premier has assigned the DG to be in charge of ICT. So we're hoping that through that support, because this is another support we wanted, the premier's support in terms of funding this youth to take these modules, to take these courses. So if we get that module right in Mpumalanga from the premier's office, this is the model that we can suggest to other premiers. We in discussion with the premier of Northern Cape on deploying the learnership of radio also. We are having VUT, Vale University of Technology in Upington. They trained as part of the preliminary discussions with CRISO Active, the computer literacy modules. So trying to spread to this. I think the only province where we don't have a current activity happening is the Free State. It's indirect. We don't have a direct one happening now. The senior citizens, yes, if these modules online are interactive, we think it will be better for senior citizens because they will be talking in isiZulu, Setswana, all the languages. Now, once we get these short courses online, it means they will be in an app on any smartphone. So it's easy access for trainees because we want to deploy them for free. But we need support of the premiers. So the minister is assisting us on that. He's going around provinces discussing this issue of broadband deployment with premiers. So there are indications of support from them. What about other universities? Yeah, as we said, the chairperson said, we step in the learnings and the lessons we learn from other universities. One day we'll be working with all universities. But that's the aim of, firstly, let's identify to make sure that we are represented in each province through a university. Then we can increase to go to other universities working with them. The basic education and yes, when we're discussing with higher education, this is where it came, because we were saying to them, if we deploy these short courses online for free, then starting from primary school, they will be accessible in their computer labs, community centers. Then our senior personnel will be having access. The University of Western Cape, as part of their deliverables, is to design the trainer module. If we get that trainer module, then in each community or community center, so we'll be having a youth, we'll be training others, or whoever is free at that time in those communities. Because the problem is to deploy content in those community centers. So we're trying to design and develop this with these universities through the college. I remember on the SA Connect, we are trying to respond to the digital opportunities, that there is opportunities for everyone digitally in the country, in the whole country. Now, I think it answers that issue of whether courses will be for free. Our aim is to deploy this online for free, the short courses. Now, the designs on the business case, when you want to grow as a youth, I've got the certificate of e-entrepreneurship from University of Pretoria, for example. I want to do the diploma. Now you have got courage to inquire for more through those universities, then you can grow. But at least we did the background work. We've introduced you to these activities, to the ICT activities. Where are they absorbed? The learnership programs that we're running now, all of them are absorbed. The radio learnership that we're running in KZN, Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, we'll be running Mpumalanga and Gauteng, all of them are with community radios. These are youth that are involved in community radios. The TV learnerships we have in Gauteng and Eastern Cape, they are also with community TVs. So they are already connected with an institution. The computer literacy team, which is in the East London, that is, they are connected with ECDC. So ECDC has identified this youth as youth that will be taken to the ECD, which is a mentorship hub for starting their own businesses. Youth that are on the local content hub, they will be used to design content, video content, archives, and all of that. So ECDC has identified this, so they are already connected. Then the entrepreneurship, as I said, they were identified by the city of Tshwane, the metro of Tshwane. So they've identified them for various projects to grow their youth in that area. The increase on awareness, yes, we haven't done much on awareness, you're right. Remember, we talked about it, we're working on it. We want to launch our awareness when our website is ready for some products that we can launch with. So if we can already have 3 short courses from University of Pretoria, they're ready. But the critical one we felt as a team is the computer literacy one. If this one is completed, then we can launch the platform. That this is the platform of government where you get free modules, access to ICT activities, to ECU, and other campaigns. Yes, we're planning on that. And this also has to do with the transformation of the institution from the NEMISA to INEC. So once we finish with the legal processes that we have one logo, one name, then we'll be launching. But we started working on that. The issue of the budget, I think the CFO is here, can I talk to what influenced that initially?
Thank you, honorable members. I just want to reiterate what the city minister and the minister had said with regards to the business case. It's just the wishes that the institution has to roll out the e-literacy program. The e-literacy program, when we started with the business case and we were a team that were hosting it, we were following the ANTAP process that, and also the NP process that talked about having an e-literate society by 2030. And we take cognizance that it's not easy to teach computers. You can't teach computers from a theory, from a book. You have to have the infrastructure, the broadband, and the tools to actually roll out this budget. And you can see that on the slides of the budget, you would see that there is a provision for infrastructure for those e-community centers. I know the CEO speaks about e-community center, e-centers, and also there is infrastructure that the institution needs to for it to be able to have for squash to have access, for people to have access
to the website to actually access those courses, and that we had said that it would be through the cloud. I think we did a proof of concept here at the summit with regards to how would one be able to actually be able to access from their community the courses and all the tools to actually assist them with their literacy course. So we benchmarked it against what we had already done with the proof of concept in the Strand, the NDP in terms of what we said about having an illiterate society by 2030, and how many people in provinces. We had all 9 provinces functional in terms of co-labs, how much it would cost, looking at other provinces to not have universities, which is the model that's being used now. So those were the things that we take into account. We take in cognizance that we should go back and make it a leaner type of exercise, whereby we should be actually be looking at making it, achieving more with less. So there's something that we can go back and actually have a look at with, like the Deputy Minister and the Minister said. But this was looking at if we had all 9 provinces functional, looking into those provinces not having access to, not having co-labs, and also how we got to actually having, I think they call it the virtual cloud, whereby the communities can be able to access and e-center managers and e-center content from the institution. But she will actually have a look at it in terms of the model, maybe driving implementation and also working with partners, how they can actually assist us in making it leaner. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think, as I said earlier on, this is the first stage. And I'm happy that because now the department has to go back with all those comments. And this allows, because our comments as well guide Treasury to look at how they deal with guide Cabinet. So until then we have to receive feedback from Cabinet if they're proceeding or not based on our comments as well input that they will be presenting. And therefore, later again, we'll deal with the letter. But I think, TM, the comments that have been raised by members are quite subjective issues that have been raised, so that we continue to interact more or less on those issues that we have raised. I have a couple of announcements that I need to make so that you can have the remainder of committee meeting members. Just to highlight, and thank you very much for the presentation and the presenters. There was an issue, I'm not sure some members were aware, but just to flag, and Minister has asked me to sincerely send his apologies. During the budget vote debate that afternoon, we picked up that I received an invite for the cocktail function, but not all members. We tried to find out what happened, and Minister has sent his profound apologies, and he has volunteered to host out of his budget, his pocket, members for a fry on the 17th of this month, which is next week Wednesday, after the city. As a way to say he is very sorry, and he really, really apologized because there seemed to have been something in the department that happened that he wasn't aware of. I raised it with him. So I'm definitely notifying members that when you see such a thing coming through, you are not surprised. Those who are willing, obviously it's not a committee meeting, it's an informal gathering. Those who are available, those who are willing to come through, will definitely communicate and coordinate through Achira as a committee person, a committee secretary. Then the second issue, members, is oversight visit. We are meeting as chairpersons tomorrow, but a decision has been taken that this time we're going to do cluster approach oversight. So all committees of parliament will be in housing from the 21st until the 26th of June. I'm waiting for more details where specifically we are going. I hope there is activity then for the sector. Where they are sending us, because we will be told. And what I'm expected to do is to say in this area, these are the issues around telecoms. Whether it's projects around connectivity or it's what I think, what we are short is post office will be there, honorable meetings, wherever we are being sent within housing. So once that detail is finalized tomorrow in the chairperson's meeting, I will be communicating to members. So I need to flag this so that members are aware. Departure will be, or arrival,
from wherever we are coming, would be, I think we're going to have what they've indicated and that we need to highlight members. There will be a briefing by whoever is allocated, there will be a chairperson delegated as leading that particular cluster on Sunday the 21st in the afternoon. But once I have, I'm making this announcement so that members can start the preparations if you have other things that you're working on, that you start looking at that and then you finish on Friday. I will send those teachers as soon as I have them. I'm hoping by tomorrow, once we are clear, I'll send the communication tomorrow to members so that they know. The other changes in the program, members, noting what members have said in the last meeting, I was not here when that meeting took place, where there was an issue that we need to try and have stability in the program so that it doesn't change. We have a lot of issues, and Honourable Sheen and members have raised with me that things that we are not even getting to. So as I try, to prioritize things that are very critical that we need to get into. And once and again, there might be issues that we pull out of the program based on priorities. But there's an issue around digital migration that is very critical. It's not reflecting on the third-term program. I have written to the chair of communication requesting a joint committee meeting on TTT. I've given her 2 days as a proposal. I have not received feedback. I've given the 4th of 8th August, which will be our first committee meeting, or the 8th. Once I receive that, it definitely will mean that we have to amend the program. The other issue that I try to pick up, the broadband rollout, which is very critical, but we need to get into it and get details of how this project is going to roll out. We haven't had that. I need to factor that as a matter of agency so that the committee is really clear what are the plans the minister is having since the announcement by the president. So those are thought it's important for me to flag members. We have started the issue of spectrum into the program, which is more critical as well, so that we try and clarify some of the issues that are in the public domain. So we are going to have to rework the third term program and come back to members based on priority issues that I've just highlighted. And I hope members would not find the program having been changed quite often, but it's for us to be able to deal with what is as well in the past space. I noted again the announcement by Telkom of the separation between retail and wholesale. We're going to have discussion with Telkom into that because there is a huge stake of public into that, and that needs to be factored into the program. So these are the developments that are happening. We can't ignore them as the committee. As they happen, we need to get details so that we are in a position to really reflect and give to our proper oversight. And I hope members will not find the changes not desirable, but in the interest of us getting answers into what seem to be things that are happening and that we need to. But members are constantly encouraged to send through things that they think should be dealing with that I might not have picked up or I have not included in the program. Because we all work as a team. It's not a program that is driven by only or that is owned by the chair, but all of us have to drive it as the committee. I hope that is acceptable, members. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.